Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the August 23rd, 2015 session from 1 Kings 8, verses 1 through 61, Public Confessions. I'm David Cassidy, and today I'm joined by Daniel Glaze, Bert Montgomery, and special guest Aaron Hall. Aaron is a blogger, mom, and is pursuing a doctorate in educational ministry at Columbia Theological Seminary in Atlanta. You already know Aaron. She's been on the podcast before, and Aaron writes our current session page guide for Faith Element each week. Aaron, we're so glad you took a bit out of your time from your studies to be with us today.
Thanks so much.
Nikki is away this week, but we look forward to her return in upcoming episodes. Daniel's going to get us started today with a quick look at the focal text.
Thanks, David. We are actually finishing up our David and Solomon series with this lesson that we have from 1 Kings 8. And I don't know about y'all, but I've really enjoyed getting to know these folks again through hearing their stories, and also as we've been invited to sort of see our own story in theirs. And as I read this section, I really see two distinct parts, or stories within the story, maybe. And Nikki does a good job covering this in her video, so I would recommend you watch that after you finish the podcast, of course. And so anyway, in part A, we have the Ark of the Covenant being brought into the temple. We have the dedication of the temple. And then in part B, we have this magnificent prayer of Solomon for the temple and on behalf of his people. And Solomon, in the dedication of the temple, gives his congregation a history lesson of sorts. He tells them that it was his father David's intention to build the temple, but God asked him to hold off and wanted Solomon to do that instead. And he says, in essence, God was faithful, God has done what God said he would do, and now I've been faithful in building this temple. And so then we have this this really mighty prayer extolling the faithfulness of God, then asking God to keep his eye upon Israel. When the people sin, forgive them, he says. When famine strikes, be merciful. When foreigners come to this temple, listen to their prayers too. He says, when, not if, but when they sin against you, God, forgive them. And this section closes with another beautiful section from Solomon, some beautiful words of Solomon. It's actually a benediction he gives over his people, reminding them to remain obedient to God. So that's a little bit of the background on our passage from 1 Kings. And, you know, now that I've given you some background, let's break this down a little bit. I really find it interesting that in Solomon, in his speech to the congregation, the first part, he looks back. In speaking of God's faithfulness and deliverance, in speaking of David's desire to build the temple, etc., he looks back, almost sort of a history lesson. But then his prayer is not backward-looking. His prayer is really forward-looking. When the people sin, when famine strikes, Lord, be merciful. Remember that we are your people. Remember that you are our God. We will seek to do the same. It's sort of an interesting dynamic here, this looking back, perhaps in order to look forward. And so we've got those two dynamics that I find really interesting here in this section.
I think I'm picturing being there in that moment. And, you know, you've dedicated this building and so much blood, sweat, and tears has gone into this building. And I think Solomon's prayer is really smart, because if you want people to look forward and move along with you, you know, a lot of times pastors and people in churches, if you start looking back and letting people remember with you, can't you just see the people sitting there like smiling and leaning back and like, you know, nudging each other? Oh, I remember that time. And so I wonder if that's maybe some buy-in from the people. You know, if we can remember how it has been, maybe there's even a little bit of trust for, okay, this might be okay. You know, this whole building that, you know, probably everyone was not on board for the building. You know, we know that there are a lot of dynamics to building this huge temple. And So looking back, I think was a smart move.
Yeah, you know, we have this. I sort of think of it as a great Southern word. I don't know if other folks use it too, but this word recollect. You know, I sometimes hear the old timers say, you know, I recollect. And I don't know the etymology of it, but if you break it down to recollect, it's almost like reaching back and sort of collecting those memories, those ideas, those events, and that propelling you forward in love and in being God's people. Aaron, I think there certainly is benefit to looking back to the past to see where you're going or where you want to go, where God's leading you, those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. Did y'all see the movie Inside Out?
Yes.
No, I haven't yet.
Okay. So memory.
But because my wife is a psychologist and also mother of children, she had to go see it.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's so much in that movie.
Yes.
And just thinking about memories. I mean, what memories build up in us and what memory can do. I mean, Bert, did you see it?
Yes, I absolutely loved it. And the loss of memories was stuck out with me too. It was very powerful.
Mm-hmm. And so to think that that's part of a worshiping community, do you think that happens in your communities where you worship? Do we remember enough?
Well, I mean, we all have selective memories. I've heard folks say, too, you know, if you really think about it, the good old days weren't all that great. But you know, in many ways were, in the fact that, you know, we can see from where we've come. And, I think one of the great benefits that faith communities can do is the telling of their story. I think, at least in some traditions, we have certainly emphasized the personal testimony, the personal story, but that communal story is incredibly important and worthy of being told, worthy of being remembered as well.
Have you ever seen people get uncomfortable in a prayer in a moment like this? Like, I'm thinking what you're saying about, you know, we have that selective memory, but sometimes when there's a pastoral prayer, have you ever heard something named in that moment? And everybody just kind of shifts a little bit, like, oh, my God, did they really just say that? It's 11:15 on a Sunday. I mean, I've seen it happen, and it's things that probably need to be named. But, you know, we need that to be part of our memory that lets us think about, you know, what we're saying in worship. But I just always think it's funny when people shift, like, oh, that was part of our prayer.
You know, as I listen to this conversation, I can't help but think about our children and youth ministries. You know, because memories are powerful, memories of the presence of God and of our experiences of faith that we share together as a community. And, you know, in the best children's and youth ministries, I think part of what they're doing is building up a repository of these kinds of memories and experiences. I mean, you know, those tricky adolescent years, they can be tricky, they can be tough. And having a repository of memories from those times when young people were, you know, experiencing the presence of God and the presence of Christian community together, I mean, those are powerful memories that accessing them can give them a sense of stability and a foundation upon which to make it through those tricky adolescent and young adult years. I mean, everything from camps, retreats, the missions experiences that they share, all these can form shared memories of times when young people are both close to each other and close to God. At the church where my family attends, each year we honor the high school graduates. And they are invited to come up to the podium and to say a few words. And it's been really interesting how many lapse into storytelling when they get to the mic. You know, I remember when we did this. I remember when we went here. I remember when so-and-so said this. And it's not just, you know, remembering times with other other young people, but they'll, you know, call out people, adults in the sanctuary. And, you know, I remember when you did this with us, I remember when we did this together. And so these shared memories and experiences, they remember them, they hold on to them. It's just amazing how much that seems to matter for young people. And it's probably one of the strengths of ministries with children and young people in our churches, maybe something we ought to work to emulate more fully, mm-hmm. you know, in adult ministries as well.
Yeah. That's really interesting, David, on a Sunday, whether it's baccalaureate, youth Sunday, whatever, on a day which is supposed to be looking forward. You know, we celebrate their accomplishments, but they are going on to other things. That the those who are given opportunity to speak often choose to look back. That's
yeah. And what is striking me listening to y'all is the emphasis so many of us have on doctrine, on believing the right things. That Christianity is this, this, and this, and what you're going to do in the future. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, well, I wouldn't put it that much, but those kids, David, that you were talking about, don't remember every specific lesson that y'all had on those trips. They don't. What is more important in long term is the experience of community together. That's when they remember their faith. They remember it in a community way, not a teaching about this, not a teaching about that. Did I believe this? But, you know, the experience.
And you know, that's okay because faith is about relationships.
Exactly,
right?
Yes.
And it's how they know faith. I mean, if you ask some of these teenagers to stand up, would you please give 10 minutes on the doctrine of whatever? They have no idea. Like, where do you even start? But when you ask them to say, okay, what meant something to you? Who would you like to say thank you to? In their storytelling, it's a place to start. Like, they have something to say. And I think maybe that's true of adults, too. And why this passage is so powerful. I mean, they all have something to say about the time when, you know, whatever happened.
Yeah. Do y'all remember a couple weeks ago, Nikki was, she was just coming back from, it was a choir tour, some sort of bus trip that she was taking. And she mentioned how, you know, it was along the long miles on the interstate. She found a lot of the teenagers were, or maybe it was the year before. I forget the details. But anyway, the point was the teenagers were telling her stories, not that she was a part of, but that preceded her or predated her. And from her perspective, what they were doing was gifting to her these stories, these memories, and saying, you know, you're a part of this too. And she was incredibly blessed by their telling of the story to her. I just really remember and really thinking how mature those teenagers were, and maybe they knew what they were doing, maybe they didn't, but how much they touched Nikki by inviting her into their experiences.
You know, talking about pulling people into the story, my husband is a pastor and has this practice of, you know, when he talks about the church's history, wherever that church has been, he says, we, even if it happened 40, 50 years ago and we were not here, he was not born. But he will say, we did so and so. And it's because he's trying to pull in, you know, himself as a pastor, but this present community into what we was 50 years ago. And I think maybe that's an important word, and maybe what Solomon is doing here, the we kind of thing.
All right. Well, one thing that this text raises for me, you know, building the temple, you know, we have to remember that it was built in the backs of slaves, and there was a lot of unethical things that went on in spite of all of its glory and all the good things about it. And to me, that's this constant tension that we still have in our contemporary church. I come from a love and appreciation for the late prophet and rabble-rouser Will Campbell, who described himself as a steeple dropout. He wanted nothing to do with buildings, because as soon as you get a building, then all of a sudden the people think God is in that building alone, and it's only for them, and all the fights and institutional bureaucracies arise. And, you know, and personally, it's been a struggle for me as a pastor, because I'm a pastor of a church with buildings, and I like the beauty. And I go and visit and worship at our local Episcopal church, which is just beautiful with the stained glass and the stories and the rich history. And so I'm at odds with this idea of, you know, we're taking money, we're taking resources, we're doing things to build a building. Is it for ourselves, even though we say it's for God? You know, and there's an old cartoon I remember that said, isn't it funny how much the Bible says about feeding the poor and how little it says about building big buildings? And so I'm always in that tension. Actually, the church I'm in right now rents a building, so we feel pretty good about it because we're not owning anything, but it is a nice building. So, you know, Daniel, you're a pastor, and Aaron, you're studying, and your husband's a pastor. Where do you deal with community needs, being a church that's relevant in terms of serving others, but at the same time, feeding and serving and protecting property?
Yeah. Well, Bert, as I say, you've gone to meddling now. Well, but I mean, that does hit close to home. I can be honest. I pastor a historic congregation over 200 years old, and our building is approach our the sanctuary building, the old part of our building, is approaching 100 years old. It's beautiful, modified Gothic. I say that like I know what it means, but I've been told it's a modified Gothic architecture with soaring arches, beautiful stained glass windows. As I look toward the back, above the balcony, there's a beautiful Christ the King window that I fix my eyes on sometimes when I'm preaching. But yes, these facilities each year take more and more of our resources. And so I don't have a good answer for what to do with that, because on the one hand, I want us to have a nice and welcoming place for to gather for worship. I think part of the sense of space is part of how we worship. There's a sacredness to that space. But, you know, that's not literally God's house. In fact, you know, I think God often calls us to get outside of those walls to follow. You know, but and then there's the issue of well, do we take care of what we believe God has entrusted to us? But it's hard. And to be very honest with you, the increased resources that we need to dedicate to facilities mean decreased resources for other very worthy causes that we do. And that's a good point.
I love the places that I've been able to worship, and some of my favorites are outside. But I have the privilege right now that we get to worship in a gorgeous building. I mean, the sanctuary is just beautiful. But I'll tell you, my favorite moments are when I'm in a place that is not your traditional Baptist building. But I've been thinking about buildings a lot. My sister drove by where my dad was a church planner about 15 years ago, and he has since moved on to another church. But the building in the land where that church was, the building's gone, and it is completely overgrown. I mean, you can't even tell. She drove by there this week, and she called and said, you can't see that there ever was a driveway. But I know for a fact that the people who were part of that church have gone out and are the body of Christ in lots of different places. So the building thing kind of, it gets me. But I was thinking about the way that we build buildings, and I don't know that I've ever heard of a community think about their space and what they want to build or what they want to keep up if they have a 200-year-old building. They don't do that and not ask the question, well, how does this reflect us? Or what do we want our building to be? There's a lot of we in the building. And you know, whatever their style is, if it's stained glass or if it's, you know, like if you go to Candler where I went to school, it's supposed to look like a bus station and the worship space. And it kind of does. It's not my favorite, but it does look like a bus station. And there's a metaphor there. But what I'm trying to get at is there's a lot of we in those spaces. And I think that is part of maybe even what we're doing in worship, that we claim incarnation and what we're doing in worship. So if a space has the we stuff in it and God can be present there, maybe even in our stupid claims about carpet and stained glass and all that ridiculous stuff, like maybe it's God getting in our space no matter what the building looks like.
Well, you know, this is tying back for me where we started this conversation with story, with experience, and with community. Because for 7 years now, I've not been in a physical church structure. Not being in a physical church structure has given our congregation a lot of freedom, a lot of liberty to do different kinds of things in worship, try different, because you didn't feel confined, you didn't feel like you had tradition. But I guess it's about a month or two ago, the parent of one of our congregants passed away in a town about an hour away, and several of us went to be with her and her family. And it was a first church of a small town in Mississippi that had been there 100 years, and it was just like so many other first churches. You know, the pews were set up in a certain way with the stained glass windows and the baptistry up high in the wall above the pulpit, the choir back there, and just being in that setting for me, for a funeral, but just being in, for a memorial service, but just being in that setting overwhelmed me with my experiences in church throughout my life. Listening, I mean, I could envision my grandparents. I could hear my Sunday school teachers when I was a kid talking. You know, all of these memories came flooding back of experience in community with God and faith in a structure like that. And I think that's the beautiful mystery of God is we could say God's not confined to the structure, and God is not. But our experience is in as much as our experience occurs, our communal experience occurs in a physical space, then that structure has meaning and God is there in that structure. Even if it's built on the backs of slaves through questionable methods with inordinate wealth that many of us would find offensive, God is still there and God can still work.
A few years ago, I had the opportunity to travel to Italy with my wife. She works at Wesleyan College right here in town, and they had put together a trip that was going to be led by an art professor and a religion professor to these particular sites in Italy. And so, of course, we went to Rome and to Florence and other places. And part of our tour, yes, we did art galleries and that sort of thing, but we also toured many cathedrals. And, you know, I've been in a lot of churches. I do photography in churches, and I've been in a lot of churches in America, and many of them can be quite beautiful. But it's rare for a church in America to compare in any way to the architecture and the art that's found in these sanctuaries in Italy. I mean, these cathedrals, the scope of them, the high ceilings, the materials out of which they build the buildings, and the sculpture and art and glass that's everywhere. They're just beautiful. And walking into one of them, it's hard not to be struck by, one, the grandeur of God. Yes, God's not this building or in this building, but the representation of a worship space with these gigantic high ceilings that says to us in some ways, you know, we are small. You know, God is great. And just being in the presence of those rooms and that art, I mean, there is something about that that, you can't deny contributes to worship and helps us remember who we are and who God is. But it also is its memory, right? Because, I mean, these sanctuaries, they are hundreds of years old. And you know, not only the people who invested in and built these buildings, these cathedrals, but all the people who worship there, whose lives passed through those spaces. You know, you stand there in one of those cathedrals and you're reminded that the community of faith is bigger than just us today. You know, and maybe sometimes art and architecture can remind us of these kinds of truths. I guess the other thing that it brings up is just the investment that was made to build these incredible structures. They were valued enough that that's where people put their energy, their time, their money to build these structures that speak. Not only, you know, they spoke then, but they still speak now, hundreds of years later. We're talking about memories and the role of spaces in the formation and preservation of these memories. And, you know, many times I think our worship spaces are also remembered because of the special moments that happen there. The weddings, the funerals, baptisms, baby dedications. These are powerful moments that happen in these spaces. Bert, earlier you were talking about being overwhelmed by your memories as you said in the church.
But for the people who put in that kind of money and time and effort, it was an expression of their faith to put that in. It might not be for us. And I'm, you know, thinking about our context, so what is the thing that we give up and sacrifice and put in that speaks to our context? I mean, we know that time is one of the most precious things that we have these days. So maybe that's it. Or
yeah, and that's important, though. And I think that they, people who feel shut out, may be looking for that space, but the space may need to look differently than what they typically think of. Because let's face it, there have been people who have been more than hurt, who have been abused, who have been exploited. Terrible things have happened inside church walls. And the thought of walking back into it doesn't overwhelm them with good memories like it did for me. And when they talk about going to church again, that's what they think. But they will go, I have found, to a fellowship like mine and others that are not in that type of traditional building, because it feels different. It looks different. It sounds and smells different. It doesn't have that. And I guess space matters. And we need variety.
And there are people who can be away from church for a long time and or step away intentionally because, you know, some sort of friction in their spirit, church was just not working for them. But when it comes, a lot of people that I know will come back for a wedding, for a baby dedication, for those moments because of the rich history that is there. Even people who feel shut out from church still seek that, and they come to that space.
Yeah, God is present. The God is not limited to one place, and God can be present in all the places. God is present in all the places.
Hearing you talk, Bert and Aaron, about different types of folks who are both have this warm feeling and have lots of good, positive nostalgia in entering worship spaces, and then those who carry with them traumatic events and bad memories. You know, these worship spaces look different for different folks, and you know, maybe that's good. There's a rich diversity to God's people, rich diversity of worship spaces, and you know, we call them each church, and it's God's desire, I believe, to live and work and for us to live and work and serve throughout those rich places, and God calls them all home.
Well, thanks to each of you for another interesting conversation. Aaron, it's always good to have you with us.
Thank you so much. This was great.
Bert, Daniel, have a great evening.
Good evening.
Amen. Bye.
Find more information about this podcast, as well as videos and teaching resources for this session at faithelement.net. Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.